Accession number 25182, Reel 5.
Sir Robert Atkinson, Reel 5.
Well, that was the end of my real war action. I subsequently served in command of the frigate HMS Tay and the lock-class frigate Alvey. The Pink was the most famous of them all. Sadly, after I left her, she was one of the first ships sunk on the Second Front. She was torpedoed early on in the invasion. The Battle of the Atlantic lasted, I think, 5 years, 8 months, and 4 days. The first encounter took place, I think, about within 24 hours of the declaration of war on the 3rd of September 1939, when the Athenia, westbound from Liverpool to Canada, was torpedoed and sunk. The final loss of the British freighter Avondale Park marked the end of this heroic struggle. I think I ought to mention, and I didn't find out till much later, that the human cost was simply enormous, with 109,600 people perishing from more than 2,500 Allied and neutral ships of 12.8 million tons. The Battle of the Atlantic campaign was masterminded from a secret command in Liverpool under the Commander-in-Chief of Western Approaches. I was finally demobbed on February the 28th, 1946. Having served precisely 5 years and 3 months on convoy duty in the North Atlantic between Londonderry, Murmansk, Iceland, Greenland, Newfoundland, and Nova Scotia. I crossed the Atlantic with my shipmates in various ships with convoys approximately 104 times. So what did we have to show for it all in the end? Well, 3 U-boats sunk, 1 U-boat damaged, 1 sitter missed, and about 210 survivors picked up. The one I missed was when Elisma mistook us in the Pink for a U-boat when I was about to ram a U-boat, and she nearly rammed us. And later we learned that the U-boat in question quietly slipped down between the pair of us. That miss has been with me all my life, that sitter that we missed. I don't think I will ever get over it. But I would say, by and large, it had been a very interesting series of experiences with fine men. And about the Germans, I will say this. I've been interviewed many times now about these Germans, what they did, and torpedoing wives and children and so forth. Not a bit of it. The German seaman was a fine seaman. He did his job. He tried to do his job. He tried to kill us. We tried to kill him. That was their job. We had a common bond, which I will call the fellowship of the sea. We had the dangers of the sea, the inclemency of the sea, the changeability of the sea. That was the common denominator. They were not political. They were seamen doing a job, and I'm glad to say we defeated them rather than they to defeat us.
You were decorated for your role in the war.
Yes, yes. It so happened I got the DSC three times and a mention in dispatches. And after the war, the reserve decoration.
How did you learn about your decorations, and how were they? Where were they presented to you?
They would be. We would be at sea, and we would learn on the radio, read out at the London Gazette, etc., 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 that made these statements, and you were awarded this. And later, you might be. You would be invited to investiture, but it was always difficult because you might not be there. So it took quite a while later to go down and get them. Rather nice. It was King George VI in those days.
Can you describe the occasion? Or the occasions when you received?
Yes, I was there three times, and gorgeous staircases, appalling loos, old-fashioned such as I've never seen in my life. We had better in the sailing ships in which I served. But great dignity and ceremony, a tremendous atmosphere, and on one occasion I was nudged by somebody who knew me, and I didn't recognize him in his equerry's uniform, or whatever it may be called. I've been to Palace now several times, and in those days it was the King, very chatty, wanted to know where did you pick these up, as he called it, and insisted upon a few details, tremendous goodwill, and altogether rather a nice experience. Later, the Queen herself, very different, more formal, shook your hand, and her manner of shaking hands was your moment of dismissal.
Can you explain for which pieces of conduct were you awarded, or were you decorated?
Well, the captain of the ship is awarded, and probably one other officer, maybe the ASDIC officer or the gunnery officer. In those days, if you had the rank of a commander, you would get a DSO. But being a mere lieutenant at that time, you got a DSC, which I think they have now discontinued to be some other decoration.
What I meant was, for which particular engagements did you receive?
Oh, there'd be one for the rhododendron, the first one, and the second one was for the pink, and the third one was for the Tintagel Castle. And the mention of the dispatches was for saving the crew of the Liberator.
Can you tell me how you came to leave the Navy? You said you were demobbed.
Oh, yes. Well, I was demobbed in 46, and immediately, beforehand, I had been invited to stay on and serve, and I decided in advance of being invited that I wouldn't, because the Navy would change its character totally. A wartime Navy with massive resources, public, etc., was very different from a peacetime Navy, where they would shrink the number of ships, less opportunities for promotion, etc., 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 albeit they offered good pensions, etc. It so happened I wasn't too bad at mathematics, and having dedicated my life in the merchant service to study, I spent most of my time studying. I went on and went into London University and studied and took engineering. and mathematics.
Can you describe the DMOB process?
The DMOB process, you're just warned that certain numbers would be demobbed at a certain time. And I, having been at the beginning, was a very early one out, you see. And yes, then you got this note that you would be demobbed here or there. In my case, it was York, you see. And you'd get a free suit and so forth, and that was it. And I went down and got in the queue with everybody else. And of course, whether you were a captain or a commander or whether you were an ordinary seaman, it meant no difference in the demob process, to which we all thought, it was Atkinson or Smith or Johnson. And you went through and you issued with a suit and a certificate of railway fare back, and that was it. And you got a nice letter from the Admiralty thanking you later on for your service. That was it.
Did you prepare for leaving the Navy, or did the Navy make any preparations?
Pardon?
Help you make any preparations for returning to civilian life?
To a point, yes. They reminded you of certain opportunities and courses that might be available, and how you could, if you'd been a lawyer halfway through, you'd be able to carry on your studies with grants and so forth. And if you were already at university, they would pay for, etc. Yes, there were certain things offered there, but not much really.
And what about in your case? You said you went to London University.
Yes, I did. No, because I was not at university before. I was at sea, and I knew I was not too bad at mathematics, and I went and got in Imperial College, and I took an honours degree in mathematics and engineering. And then later, whilst I was there, I got a scholarship to the MIT in mathematics, and I went over to America, and I then subsequently decided to take postgraduate mathematics. And that's where I met my Waterloo, because I thought my intellect was better than it was, albeit I was working with the Aluminium Company of Canada, and I wanted to take a master's degree in mathematics with a view to a doctorate in engineering.
Can I just noises. Can you describe the DMOB process?
Well, the DMOB process was largely, you knew when you were going to be demobbed, because it was due to seniority related to your joining, your starting date. So having started on the 3rd of September 1939, I was very senior in that demob date. You expect to know approximately when, and then wherever you're serving, you're told a certain date and that you go. You go home, and at a later date, very soon afterwards, you have to appear at various headquarters, such as York, which appeared in my case. And you go to York, and you get in the queue. There's no such thing as rank. You use but surname and number, and you're issued with a free suit, either blue or grey, to your choice, to your measurement, and that is it. Meantime, you have a letter from HMG thanking you for your service, and hopefully you'll do well. And separately, you do receive information concerning future courses related or unrelated to your pre-war activity. All very helpful. And for example, if you were at university and were disturbed, they will pay your fees and return you to there. Or if you're a lawyer, halfway through your articles, etc. But if you were not, they would not start you off in a new career. And it was as simple as that.
You've been in the Merchant Navy before you joined the Royal Navy.
Yes.
Did the Royal Navy provide you with any assistance on leaving?
From leaving?
Or on leaving the Royal Navy?
Did the what?
Did the Royal Navy provide you with any assistance?
No, I did it myself. I didn't ask them for anything. I decided that the Navy was not for me anymore, and that new chapters were beckoning, and I always wanted to be in industry, and I decided I would first change my career completely. I was a sailor, and after the war, I promptly did one voyage in command of a merchant ship, just for the hell of it, since I was, etc. And I don't think many people have served in command of merchant ships as well as warships, and I wanted to accomplish that, and did. And I wasn't too bad at mathematics, so I enlisted at Imperial College and took an honours degree in mathematics and in engineering studies. And after that, I promptly went to America and worked with Alcan. I had been awarded a scholarship to the MIT in Massachusetts, and I worked with Alcan in charge of their shipbuilding. They were building ships different parts of the world. So with my sailor's qualification of having served in command, my engineering degree, I was able to manage shipbuilding. I went on to study postgraduate mathematics at McGill, but there was a very interesting feature in my life. I realized fairly early on, at the age of 33, that it was perhaps beyond the limit of my intellect, the very, very high mathematics, and being employed and working full-time, it was too much, so I dropped it and concentrated on my career. I returned to England as managing director of a company called Hamworthy Engineering Company in Poole. I did 4 years there, and then was appointed to managing director of William Doxford, the very large diesel engine builders. I wrote 3 or 4 technical papers whilst I was at Oxford, and I was awarded the James Clayton Medal for my work on the vibration and manufacture of steel crankshafts. Oxford having had many problems with crankshafts. I moved from there to be a managing director with Tube Investments under Lord Plowden, and had responsibility for the steel rolling mills and steel machine tool products. Then I moved to chairman of Aurora in Sheffield, which the manufacturer of special steels, very high special steels, was appointed a non-executive director of a merchant bank, and also a non-executive director of Stag Furniture of Nottingham, and I pursued that activity until 1979, 80, when to my surprise I was invited by Sir Keith Joseph to be chairman of British Ship Builders. When I arrived to see Sir Keith, I said to him, "You mean British Steel, not British Shipbuilders?" "No," he said, "I mean shipbuilders. We have a chairman for British Steel." I said, "I'm in steel, I'm no longer in shipping." "No, but you said you were in shipbuilding, and you have a profit record. So it is British Shipbuilders," which I took for 4 years. I also wrote... I wrote several papers whilst I was there, and my final paper, which was written 3 years ago, was on the decline, the growth and decline of British shipbuilding since 1850. And finally I hung up my boots, and in 19... 86, I dropped all business activities and turned on to the new chapter of retirement.
You were knighted?
Yes.
In 1980, I believe.
After I did 4 years as chairman of British Shipbuilders, then I carried on with Aurora again as chairman, and with a merchant bank, and with Stag Furniture. And I think I retired from all my activities at the age of 70, which would be 1986.
You were knighted?
Yes.
In
1984. 83.
Can I ask you about your the impact of your experience in the Navy on your subsequent career?
Yes, as I say before that, I think in a negative way, the impact of what I saw in the merchant service, of the social behaviour and the lack of study, caused me to realise quickly that there were greater things to be achieved, but by the pursuit of hard work and study. And all right, the top was the captain of a ship, which I achieved and did, but beyond that was life, the real life that I wanted. Now, my naval career had taught me the absolute importance of precision, punctuality, dedication, sincerity, no alibis. And I served under some famous men who were needlework in all they did. And I thought that that was the only way. I took that with me into industry. I changed the nature of several companies by exacting my style of management, which in those days was unknown to have a business plan, forecast earnings, capital expenditure. And I learned the importance that Lord Clarendon taught me of short board meetings, a proper agenda, minutes within a day of the meeting, who will do what, when, what's investment, when is the return, and how much. And I felt there was no escape from truth. And I took that right through life. And I have enjoyed that approach to all my personal problems, as well as my business problems.